gonna be.
Bradley Basker. Stats Adam.
Live from the K-Ware Studios here at Washington University in St. Louis. Bedtime Sports with Brad and Brad. Brad Lewis is away this week again. Let's win a game.
Hi, Dr. Jeff here.
What's up, Milo?
Hey, how you guys doing?
Join the Facebook page, Bedtime Sports with Brad and Brad.
It's Bedtime Sports with Brad and Brad, with Brad and Stats Adam.
I'm not hearing myself right now. Are you hearing me?
I think I am, yeah.
All right, cool. Usually there's like a little bit of, echo in the ears, but I'm not getting a little of that. So, you know what? If you can hear me and everyone out there can hear me, awesome. Welcome to Bedtime Sports with Brad and Stats Adam, our final show, the final countdown stats. Coming live from the Palatial K-Ware Studios here at Washington University in St. Louis on a Tuesday afternoon, May 13th. 3 o'clock Central Time, 4 p.m. on the East Coast. As always, on kword.com, where you can stream us live. Also, the K-Ware app, if you're, on the go. You can listen to us. We'll be on for the next hour or so, recapping essentially 3-plus years of Bedtime Sports magic. Stats came on a semester after we started. Really happy to have him, back then. We're happy to have him today. We're going to be playing some sound from the first show that ever happened, way back in January of 2011. We're going to play Stats' debut on April 24th, 2011.
April 24th or April 17th?
April 17th. Okay. And then we're going to play a rant that I had, which I think goes down as one of the most idiotic rants we've ever had on this show in retrospect. And you'll have to hear, you'll hear what I mean. So Stats, initial thoughts as we go into our last show officially in the K-Ware Studios. What's going through your mind right now?
Well, it's kind of weird because everything's coming to a close here in St. Louis. It's tough to put words to it because it was such a memorable experience. We'll never be able to recount these days. They were just unbelievable. I'm just so happy just to be able to part of this with you, just to be able to do this every week, to have so much fun, and I don't know what we're going to be able to do without it. Maybe we'll be able to do a few Google Plus things from here and there, but never anything like this.
Yeah, no, it really has been a great run, and I know that we've accumulated a pretty big following. Yes. Our Facebook group's now up to 161 members. We've got 11 listeners right now, and all 11 are, probably listening with 5 friends. So I think,
yes, of course,
66 people listening, really, just 11 devices. But let's start the show off, Stats. We'll get to some actual sports. But let's start off the show with playing the first open that we ever had at Bedtime Sports when I was with Brad Lewis, the past host, one of the founders of this show. We're going to play that and hear a little bit about what we used to do back in the day and how uncomfortable and awkward I was when I first started out. So let's get that going. Welcome you to the debut of the Brad and Brad in the Evening show, coming to you at 8:11 Central Standard Time from the KWUR station. I'm here, Bradley Basker, alongside my buddy Brad Lewis. We're here to give you an hour of sports talk radio, whatever you guys like. Welcome to call in. We're excited. This is the first of many. This is going to be a great thing.
Better late than never, right? 8:11.
That's what I'm talking about. How you doing, Brad?
Been good. The classes started a few days ago. Haven't been up on my sports game like I should be, but Let's see how things go tonight. Yeah, yeah, you know.
Stats just, you know, 30 seconds into the open, the chemistry just was not there off the bat. Just kind of awkward. What's up, Brad? You know, what are your thoughts?
College sports radio show? College radio? It's going through all the years, you know, just speaking to family members, speaking to friends, just about the difference between your first night or your first few weeks and your first few times on the radio, or just even just speaking in general in a media format, it's all about comfortability. It's the idea of putting together a show that you can understand is conversation. I think my dad always talks about, you know, Dr. Jeff, of course, talks about the sports reporters, where it's a conversation. You get to go back and forth. You get to talk about everything. You get to enjoy your conversation. You get to be able to talk about important attributes, important things, but not in a way that it's like the coffee shop. It's the way that it's professional, and you're giving a great point, and you'll be able to talk, and be able to talk as friends too.
Yeah, no, it definitely has come a long way from where we first were on that first show. Let's just listen to a little more sound here.
Fantastic.
Oh, this is like the spring training for the baseball players. We got the regular season coming up soon. We got scheduling tomorrow. We'll know our permanent time slot.
Hey, you know what?
What?
We're talking about practice, man. We're talking about...
Basically, that's exactly what I'm talking about. Practice, baby.
So, this is our first show. And hopefully we'll be at a normal time so you guys can all listen in. And we'd like to welcome you to KWUR Clayton 90.3 FM.
So, this is a national sports talk radio show. We're going to garner viewers from the West Coast, the East Coast, possibly Hawaii. This you can listen to us internationally on KWUR.com, stream it live. We look forward to getting your phone calls, email in, Twitter. We're a social media show. Facebook, you can message either one of us if you got any ideas about what we're saying. But we're going to talk about topical issues. It's once a week, so we just got to talk about the big issues. So let's start right off.
Let's do it.
NFL playoff action, yo. We got the Steelers hosting.
So there it is. That was that cold open we had. You can tell it's a little unrehearsed, but it's, looking back, it's kind of funny. It wasn't too bad.
I was waiting for, you know, when they do the SNL skit at the beginning of, you know, they do the cold open there. I was waiting for, and this is, you know, because I feel like the way that you guys were doing it, you're doing it in a way that just... It felt like you had rehearsed a very stunted way of speaking to each other, and it was just really funny. No,
absolutely. We hadn't talked all that much before the show. Today we do a lot more preparation than we did in the past, but well, it's fun to listen to. I think, looking back, I think I tried a little bit too hard to, like, you know, emulate some of the other sports talks hosts. You know, when I say we got NFL action, yo. That was Tony Bruno, who was one of my favorite radio hosts back then. So I think nowadays I've carved out my own identity as a sports talk host, and you are the same. You know, I can't say that there's anyone else I've heard on the radio like you. You know, you're very unique. Your stats, Adam. No one can take that away.
Wow, I'm not sure what to say. But with all these compliments going back and forth, it's really interesting because. Whenever I would take over in the, you know, the main host role off of a certain, you know, weekend or something like that where I'd be filling in for you, I don't know how you do it. I don't know how you take the primary host role and be able to jump on it and be able to take an entire show and be able to run with the punches no matter what, or roll with the punches no matter what. It's difficult. I remember doing a few shows with Jake Seawalk. We'd get through about three topics because I would just continue going back and forth on some topic that, and you're trying to listen, you're trying to be able to organize everything. There's so much that goes into it. I feel like being able to do that week after week, you're able to bring everything together. And you could easily do a show on the weekends and be able to host something, any sports or any show, just because you have that niche.
No, for sure. And I think as time went on, you know, with Brad Lewis and you and Jake Seawalk and me and you and Craig Hoovler, remember Craig?
Yes.
You build up chemistry, you get an idea of what types of questions your co-hosts respond well to. And it's been fun to lead shows in different ways as the number, you know, in the number one seat and, you know, serving up softballs to your co-host to make sure they're the most comfortable. Let's let's get to your debut, Stats. I'm going to play some sound. What happened was, just to recap, you were watching the end of a playoff game between the Celtics and the Knicks.
Absolutely.
The first hour, we did a lot of college basketball talk with Craig Hoover and his friend Michael. And then you came in studio just after the game. And let's get the sound from that.
Just walking in now is our NBA basketball expert for the day. Donning his, what was that jersey?
Shaqtus.
Into the mic, please.
It was the Shaqtus.
Big Shaq, number 36, wearing the jersey. This is Adam Lowenstein. He is our NBA basketball insider for the day.
I feel like we should give coming him like, off like a welcome or something like that. Like Adam and Lowenstein in the house.
An initiation or something like that.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
All right, so Adam, you just came from that game. We were following it. We had some callers giving us instant reaction. We saw it late. We saw that we'd won. Your initial reaction to the game.
Well, I just want to give you a Sean Grandy impersonation first. Ray for the lead. Got it! He just unbelievable. Just, I feel like Jermaine was definitely your MVP tonight, actually. Your unsung MVP. And then Ray Allen.
He started that third quarter run. We were talking about before the show. He got with the blocks and the jump.
Just want to say, just interrupt that. The fact that we ever said Jermaine O'Neal was MVP is laughable in retrospect, right? Especially after the way he just like crumbled at the end of that playoffs. But I guess on that night, he was something special.
Yeah. That was game one, I think. I'm pretty sure of the Knicks-Celtics series that ended up being a Celtics sweep, a four-game sweep, and then they just got destroyed by the Heat in the following round, which kind of same thing happening with the Nets right now. Not to that degree, but similar situation.
He got us back within striking distance when we needed to, or coming out of the break.
It was really impressive, too, because what he had was he contributed to the best offensive rebounding game of the season for the Celtics. The most they've had in all 83 games.
I saw they had 15, according to CBS Sports.
Exactly. Yes, exactly.
They out-offensive rebounded the Knicks.
Yeah.
Who also had a lot of offensive boards, but
you're going to expect that in a type of game with the New York Knicks because they just go for the ball. They're just a high-paced team. But that score is not reflective of what the New York Knicks did this season.
And the thing is that I've been saying the Knicks need a center. Amari Stoudemire is not a center. Jared Jeffries is not a center. Rony Turiaf is the most undersized center in the game if he is one. And he's a scrub.
The 08 finals.
He's a backup center. They need a center because Celtics do not offensive rebound well at all. That's not that they like to get back on defense. So when you get 15 offensive rebounds without a Kendrick Perkins and without a Shaquille O'Neal, something is up. I think this should be a message to Donnie Walsh. Get Dwight Howard in a year's time.
What makes no sense was Rony Turiaf had the softest hands of any player tonight except for Jermaine O'Neal. I have no idea where he came out of tonight, but he actually had a good game on the offensive side but didn't contribute defensively, rebounding-wise.
It's just hilarious. Like Rony Turiaf making contributions.
Oh, man.
This is the year before Dwight Howard is a free agent. I think ultimately he ended up exercising one more year. He played his second year. Our sophomore year he played
Los Angeles?
In Orlando. Then junior year.
Oh, thank you. Yes. LA. Thank you. Oh, wow.
So it's just interesting to hear what we were talking about back then. The fact that Jermaine O'Neal and Rony Turiaf were playing roles in a big playoff game is just funny to listen to.
And Jermaine had that, I think it's Damon Mandelaro who calls him Gentle Jermaine, which I kind of enjoy. And he actually battled through seven games of that first round series with Los Angeles, the Clippers this time. And I feel like what's weird is that he made his own little renaissance. Rony Turiaf had a few little fun games this past year for the Wolves. It's always fun looking back, and you can always go back to like the old baseball guys you remember from 01 and going, remember the All-Star games and stuff like that. Alfonso Soriano hitting the Coke bottles at Fenway Park and the Futures games. It's always fun to look back, and this is just something that you can always do, but in a way that we analyze games that we just were able to look at everything and see what we wanted to talk about. Jared Jeffries, we haven't seen him in years.
Yeah.
And I still hear my voice cracks just seeping through.
It's
gets so excited.
But yeah, I mean, you came in, you were polished, you were bringing the stats. I think that it was like at that moment I realized you were going to be Stats Adam. You weren't just going to be Adam Lowenstein, basketball insider. You were going to be Stats Adam. The name's nickname stuck, and hopefully, I mean, you tell me. Do people call you Stats or Stats Adam, or is it just people in my circles?
It's a good number. I've been working with quite a few different sports groups, I guess, as far as writing, radio, stuff like that, and Stats will be a common phrase in which they'll be thrown in emails and everything like that instead of even just Adam. It'll just be like shortened to Stats. And
I love it.
I remember us working, we brought our block together where we were living together last year in the same floor, and I remember there was this one thing, we I was working on a spreadsheet for everybody for, like, I think, like, workout time, something like that, and it was like, and stats! And that's is a great quote that we keep going for forever and ever.
Oh, it's great. And I don't want to take credit for coming up with the nickname because it was your Twitter handle, but I feel like I can take some credit for disseminating it and making it big.
Absolutely.
On the K-Word airwaves and elsewhere.
Absolutely.
All right, so you made a list of...
Oh, yeah.
Some big sporting momentous occasions over the last 3+ years. Let's talk about the first one that you have on that list. Bruins over the Canucks in Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Finals. Just that whole run.
Oh, yeah.
That was fun. And that ended a 39-year streak for the Bruins without a Stanley Cup. What do you remember about that?
Well, I remember one. Well, I'm sure there's something you remember very well, and we'll get to that. The idea that they had gone the previous year and were a title contender, a team that was up 3-0 in the second round of the playoffs. Interesting enough that we're coming around to that time again in the 2014 Stanley Cup playoffs, but they didn't have a 3-0 lead any time recently. The 3-0 lead against the Philadelphia Flyers that they ended up losing in that series in the semifinals was just unbearable. It was awful. It was a terrible way to end a season. You lost three consecutive games, and then in Game 7 at TD Garden, we're up 3-0, correct? 3-0 with Tuukka Rask in goal, still the current goalie of the Bruins, and then proceeded to give up 4 goals to lose the series 4-3. And then you come back the following year with Bradley Vasker against you, and the entire the entire fan base rallying around but not being sure if this team could do it, and winning that decisive Game 7 in Vancouver to win the Stanley Cup in 2011.
It was a great run.
Unbelievable.
Improbable. And Tim Thomas just was incredible, won the Conn Smythe for the best.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well deserved.
Absolutely.
But probably the note, looking back, let me set the scene. After 2 games in Boston, if I'm not mistaken, the Bruins lost both games to the Montreal Canadiens and were down 2-0 going back to Montreal. Backs up against the wall, looking terrible. This is coming off that Flyers debacle the previous year when they blew a 3-0 lead. This is after Game 7 losses under Claude Julien. I think they were 1-4 in the first 5 Game 7s. This is an epic rant that I had. Pretty much say, well, we'll let you listen. Listen in here. It was here. Let's do it.
We got about 10 minutes left in the show. I just want to take the... I said to myself, I'm not going to let my forum, the opportunity, 2 hours on national airwaves, international airwaves. We could be heard across the ocean in Afghanistan and Siberia. Like, I mean, we go... Our range is better than Dustin Pedroia's range at second base. We go cross world. We are worldwide. We are international, which is why I want to take this opportunity to rip the Boston Bruins. All right, just hear me out. Feel free to step in at any point.
You take the mic. No, trust me. You take the mic. You can rip them.
All right.
I've already put them away.
All right. I'm going to try to keep this appropriate and not make sure nothing comes out of my mouth that I'm going to regret later. Okay, here we go. Let's start. For one, the Bruins suck, okay? Fire Claude Julien, the coach. He's an absolute joke. Every single year, the Bruins fans get up. They fill the seats. Every single night at the TD Garden is a packed house. And they charge just as much as Celtics do for whatever reason. Hockey, they charge more for games. And every year, the Bruins make the playoffs, and they get our hopes up. And this year, they're a 3-seed. They have a Vezina Trophy winner in goal. But they haven't found a freaking offensive goal scorer who can put the ball in net all the time. Nathan Horner was supposed to be that guy. He's a joke. Milan Lucic gets easy putbacks and empty net goals. He's not a goal scorer. Zdeno Chara, I don't know what happened with him, but he had dehydration, couldn't play. You know, do you think Kobe Bryant sits out with dehydration? A do-or-die game against the Boston Celtics? The Canadians are the Lakers to the Boston Bruins, and he sits out. I'm not even questioning that. I'm just questioning decision-making. Peter Chiarelli, the GM, get him out of here. He's had too many chances, too many moves that have just not panned out. Just we're not scoring, and then Tim Thomas lets up 2 goals in the first 3 minutes of the game, stems the tide till the end of the second period. We make it 2-1, lets up a third goal. It's just inexplicable rebounds. There's no physicality. We showed it in the regular season, and in the playoffs, something happens. We blew a 3-0 series lead to the Flyers last year. It was only the second time ever in hockey. couple that with the fact that we had a 3-0 lead in Game 7 at home and blew that game. I'm sick of the Bruins. I feel bad for Bruins fans that watch every single game. I watch a lot. I try to stream them as much as I can. I get pumped up. But I think they deserve to be absolutely bashed right now. They do not get a free pass in the city. This is Boston. Okay, they're not going to get a free pass. It's time that fans take a stand. Claude Julien, the coach, out. Peter Chiarelli out. Get Cam Neely, who knows players, who was a great Boston Bruin, who understands the ethos of being a Boston Bruin, behind in the bench, being the coach of the Bruins, and that's the direction they have to go. Blow up the team. Start a scratch. I don't care if we have a couple years of rebuilding. This team is not going to win a championship anytime soon.
I want to see that Cam Neely from...
Just to give everyone a little bit of context, the Bruins ended up going on after that rant where I said that they should blow up the team to win a Stanley Cup and to go to another Stanley Cup last year and on the verge of potentially another one. So I clearly know nothing about hockey because I was the one saying, blow the team up. Looking back, that is an epic rant, but they absolutely just, I was wrong. I was wrong, Stats. It's hilarious to listen back to. It just shows you how in the moment sports fans can be about their feelings. But at the time, the Bruins, it just did not look good. But that's why sometimes you have to have a big picture perspective before you start making brash claims about blowing up a team.
You also have to get really lucky. Tim Thomas, if he wasn't on that team or if he lets up a couple goals here or there in that Canadian series in that third game, they wouldn't be able to win four of the next five. By the way, what a weird coincidence that we're now going to a Game 7 Wednesday night against the Montreal Canadiens with the Bruins. So really some nice coincidences occurring here. But I don't think I should get off easy. I think I was ready to bash them just as much as you were. So
yeah,
I think I apologize just
like
as well.
I've written them off. You stuck it in there, but I think it was overshadowed by my five-minute rant. All right, well, I don't want to bore everyone with a little hockey. I mean, just thought that was a good soundbite.
That's fantastic.
Another big event that happened in 2011 was the Cardinals' run to the World Series championship against the Rangers. For anyone that was at WashU at the time, you were all watching Game 6. Comeback after comeback after comeback. David Freese hitting the game-tying triple and then the walk-off home run. Just an epic, epic game. It was great to be in St. Louis for that entire atmosphere. The environment was electric. The city was galvanized. What do you remember from that fun time being here at WashU?
What's crazy is that I remember Dr. Jeff was here. He stayed in my suite ready to go to Game 7. We ended up going. It was a lot of fun. It was exciting. And went to quite a few of the games in the World Series or the playoffs. It was just a lot of fun to just see the entire run in front of our eyes. The whole idea was that the Cardinals had been a perennial favorite. They've always been a good team, but for some reason they always fall under the radar. It makes no sense whatsoever, but I think it's about it being a Midwest team, a team that seems to always do well, but doesn't get the cachet that a big market team does. It's kind of like the San Antonio Spurs of baseball. And just the amazing run that culminated with the Alan Craig is the niche behind the scenes great hitter. It was David Freese winning the game in Game 6 in front of the Busch Stadium crowd, and then Chris Carpenter closing it out in Game 7. Just, it was an unbelievable World Series. Esteban Hermann might have been the worst player in MLB history to play in a World Series. For some reason, Ron Washington continued to pinch hit him time after time after time. And as a person who wanted to see the Cardinals win, it was great to see Esteban Hermann get up there. I gave him a standing ovation every time I saw him batting. It was hilarious. But what a run that was. It was great to see it. It was fun. It was our first full year. We saw that team in the springtime when we were starting school here. I think it was our spring semester of our first year. And then got to see, as our sophomore year began, just watching just that great World Series run. And what a World Series run it was.
It was. And that was the year that they, if I'm not mistaken, that the Braves collapsed.
Yes.
It was a 10.5 game lead. Something ridiculous. You can't really get that number. But mm-hmm. it was double digits. Mm-hmm. That was the same year the Red Sox blew their wild card lead to the Rays.
It was that one last day where everybody, oh, man, that was nuts.
I remember that because it was Jewish holiday, Rosh Hashanah. Mm-hmm. I came back from dinner, got into Bear's Den, which is the WashU dining hall for freshmen and sophomores, saw the TV was on. I remember vividly to the left of the SportsCenter screen was the ticker with what's coming up, and on the top left it said, Red Sox lose, Rays win, Rays are in. And I was just demoralized. I just sat there, head in my palm, just disconsolate.
Robert Andino, right?
That's it.
Ugh. Jonathan Papelbon just being on the mound. Was that his last moment as a Red Sox?
Must have been. Yeah. Bad way to go out. I think that probably soured his relationship a little bit with Red Sox Nation.
I think, ironically, the Phillies, of course, Papelbon's current team and team he went to after the Red Sox, beat the Braves to knock them out of the playoffs and allow the Cardinals in, and the Cardinals eventually beat the Phillies, who pushed the Braves out. I'm sure the Phillies actually had the Braves numbered. They could have let them win. And the Cardinals were able to, by the skin of their teeth, make it into the playoffs and win another World Series with a low number of wins. So just like in hockey and baseball, both these sports carry a lot of momentum in the playoffs based on your pitching, based on your goalies, respectively. It's just really interesting when you look at a situation in which these, you know, you look at the Blues. They are first-round perennial exit because it's typically the goaltending seems to just not work for them. Yeah. And it's just an interesting thing with these two sports that the better teams during the regular season don't always win the postseason.
And the Bruins are experiencing that right now, the Boston Bruins. They're the best team by far in the regular season. The Canadiens just seem to match up well with them.
President's Trophy.
The Grizzlies and the Thunder. The Thunder are way better than the Grizzlies were.
Mm-hmm.
But
matchups.
If there's no suspension of Zach Randolph and Tony Allen's not banged up, Mike Conley's not banged up, you make the case that the Thunder are playing golf right now. So it goes to show you, it's all about matchups, getting hot at the right time, and the Cardinals in 2011 got hot, and the city got behind them, and it was a pretty fun time to be here. Although as time has gone on, I've become more and more anti-Cardinals just because I find their fans are at times insufferable. I'm not sure they feel... Many people feel the same way about... Boston
we're much worse.
Fan, but I just, I'm not gonna get.
I'm surprised.
Say something.
I've heard that.
Regret.
I remember you mentioning that.
Just I root pretty adamantly against the Cardinals. I will be at the Cardinals game tonight with WashU Senior Week. I'll be rooting for the Cubs.
Oh jeez.
I'm already wearing my blue, so that's gonna be a fun night.
One quick thing. You know, going full circle once again with the World Series winning 2011 to St. Louis Cardinals. Tony La Russa will be speaking at the Washington University graduation, so we have our final senior day event tonight with Adam Wainwright on the mound against, the famous Jake Arrieta of our AL East fame in the past. And then Tony La Russa on Friday will be speaking to the entire Washington University class of 2014. So it's just very interesting to just put everything together. And I actually just got an update. MLB actually released the video, or they were popularizing the video of Game 7 of 2011 today. The 11th World Series in Cardinals history. So, some fun coincidences and, little text in from Alex Griffel. Is it Griffel?
Griffel.
September 28th, 2011. That's the day that the three games came down to it. Orioles game was a walk-off in the ninth, we remember with Papelbon, and it went to extra innings where the Phillies had to beat the Braves. And I think it was like a walk-off single or a walk-off groundout. I remember an infield hit or something like that, or maybe just sneaking out of the outfield. Oh, Dan Johnson.
All but gave the Rays the win.
Oh,
were,
man.
Specifically, they were up five runs.
Yes.
There was a double, I think, that someone hit into the gap, and Teixeira was on second, and we got to third on the double. And that's when I realized, after watching the highlights, that the Yankees probably wanted the Rays in and not the Red Sox. So that still is just a little bit of a sore spot for me.
Did you want to go over those pitchers quickly? That was one of the funniest days in MLB history, just because of the pitchers, 8, 7, and 12. I just wanted to, do you remember who pitched that day for the Yankees?
No.
Okay, so they preempted all of their starting rotation, threw them into the playoffs, which makes sense. This is no way of blaming the Yankees for doing this. They were in position to do this. I can't even pronounce his name.
Betances.
Thank you. He was the phenom who was supposed to be really good for them. Then they pitched. They pitched out 10 different pitchers in this game. None of them pitched more than two innings.
Yep.
After the starter, it was one inning max. I'm sorry, Scott Proctor, 2 2/3, who I remember, I think it was his second stint with the Yankees.
Yep.
It was after Joe Torre almost killed him.
Yep.
Like, his arm almost fell off physically.
I remember that.
So, it's just crazy looking at just what they did to send the Red Sox out of the playoffs.
Even A.J. Burnett got a third of an inning.
Phil Hughes an inning, Aaron Laffey, oh my, jeez.
Just tremendous.
So, they enjoy that.
Seth, I have up here the biggest stories of 2011. Let's just rapid fire. I'm gonna, yes. You know, pull them up. We'll go just a line or two about each of them.
Great.
And hopefully we can get through 2011, 2012, 2013, maybe a little 2014.
Sounds great.
So 2011, Drew Brees breaks the Dan Marino's. Is it Dan Marino's passing yards record?
Sounds about right.
And was it? And also, was it possibly the consecutive games with a
touchdown? Did Brady end up beating that?
The passing yards was Dan Marino's, and he broke that in 2011.
You know what? For me, and this is something that I'm still trying to figure out. All these counting numbers in football, they're more meaningless than counting numbers in basketball. Do you know that? What I think the top two scorers in NBA history? Abdul-Jabbar and Karl Malone.
Malone's number two? Is it maybe Moses? It's definitely not Carl.
You sure?
I think it's Carl.
See? Do we know? Do we know for sure? Football is even less important. I just don't care. You know what? I honestly don't. You have a great season in football. Your team is usually down a lot. You usually pass a lot. That's usually the passing yards. It just does not matter to me. I don't know what you think.
Wait. Well, now, just because of how the rules have changed and protecting
receivers definitely.
And passing games and quarterbacks can't get touched anywhere, you know, except right in the midsection, it's so much easier for quarterbacks to just obliterate records. So in that respect, I agree. But the way Drew Brees was playing.
Oh, definitely. Season, oh, of course. It's a more memorable season.
They've been this generation's version of the greatest show on turf, which the Rams were, you know, in the late 90s, early 2000s. The Saints, when they're at home, they're just a completely different team, and they're fun to watch.
By the way, Karl Malone. Can you believe that?
Really?
So that's, see? So who would know that? If you
that's
ask
incredible.
20 people on the street, I'm pretty sure no one would be able to come up with both of those. So football is even more meaningless. It's just I understand the season itself though. Fantastic, you're absolutely right.
All right, David Stern vetoing the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers.
I remember I had this photo. I remember the Basketball Jones, who are now the starters on NBA TV. Fantastic podcast. They had this great graphic of 1 minute the Chris Paul jersey in New Orleans, then 1 minute in a Los Angeles Clippers jersey, yep. And then the next minute back in a New Orleans. It was New Orleans Hornets at that time jersey. And then eventually going to the Clippers. Flabbergasted. It changed the NBA in total. And what's ironic enough is that the Clippers, once again, will be doing that with the Stahl and Sterling thing. The Clippers might be completely obliterated by next year. So I guess to go full circle again. So the whole idea was that, you know what? We have now seen a terrible Lakers team because of David Stern.
Yeah, and a Clippers team that was resurrected. And
resurrected or actually made good for the first time in ever? This is their best 3 years ever.
Yeah, but they've been in the playoffs under Mike Dunleavy.
Okay.
They
okay.
just had never been great. I mean, that was when they had Chris Kaman as their all-star.
The skeleton.
But looking back on it, it actually maybe brings into question what kind of relationship David Stern had with Donald Sterling and how much money Donald Sterling was making in the NBA. And that's my conspiracy theory of the day, is that there was something going on there. Donald Sterling, you know, was doing something financially to, you know, make David Stern a little bit more predisposed positive towards him. So that's my conspiracy theory right there. This was huge. Albert Pujols leaves for free agency for the Angels, signs a $254 million deal. That was a shocking, astounding number. It was pretty clear that the Cardinals weren't going to go that high. But when the Angels came out of that as the front runners, and ultimately he's signing him, I mean, that was a pretty big deal. That to me could end up being the worst contract of all time.
He's doing all right this year, right?
He's having a decent year. I mean, I don't know what he's done in May. I know in April he had 9 or 10 home runs. He was doing great, but still, I mean, the question is, and this is a question that I think you can have for hours. When is a contract worth it? Clearly, Albert Pujols is not going to be hitting 35 home runs into the 9th and 10th year, but if he goes 4 or 5 years with decent numbers and they win a World Series. And this is the case I was making with Miguel Cabrera. Is the contract worth it if he leads you to World Series over the course of the lifetime of that contract? I say yes, because honestly, money is just an object to these owners. And if he brings you a World Series, which is the ultimate goal, if he's the centerpiece, he's done his job, the contract to me is worth it. Because to me, money is not an object when it comes to sports.
Especially in baseball. And by the way, 2011, Cardinals won 90 games, Angels won 86. Cardinals just had one fewer win in 2012. And then last year, 97 Cardinals victories, Angels 78. So far, actually, the Angels have a better winning percentage this far this season, but I'm still thinking the Cardinals will perform better than the Angels once again. I know Josh Hamilton, we'll see what happens when Josh Hamilton comes back, but really interesting story. Very interesting.
All right, this was a big one.
Oh, yeah. This is...
The Joe Paterno scandal. I remember this was sophomore year. It was just constantly on TV.
Yep.
24 hours, around the clock. The Jerry Sandusky incident, obviously. Yep. Joe Paterno passes away soon after. Takeaways from that time.
All right, well, I saw it through quite a few different lenses. The first was a familiar studio for both of us, the 98.5 The Sports Hub studio in Boston, Massachusetts. You had interned for the Felger Maz show during the 2010 summer.
2011.
You were 2011 summer? Okay, so I was 2012 summer. Yep. This is the falling out of the scandal. The CNN coverage all over the TVs, everything like that. You saw him, you know, being sentenced to life or however many lives, whatever it was, you know, until death. And I saw it through all these guys who are a little older, a little bit more passionate about this type of thing, because I really just didn't, you know, it just didn't have that much of an effect on my day-to-day life. Obviously, it was a terrible event. It was a frustrating situation. But from guys who knew this situation better than I, it was one of the biggest in sports, and if anything, I'm guessing the Sterling one that now is going on is topping that in a different direction, though.
Yeah.
But that was... The thing about the Sterling one is that's affecting people with housing and stuff like that. This was affecting people themselves.
Kids.
If anything, this should be talked about as one of the biggest sports stories in sports history. But for some reason, it seems to be swept under the rug. You only talk about it now when Joe Paterno's talked about getting a statue or something, or you know, they took away that statue, they want to do a new statue. That's all you talk about now. I don't think it actually gets the coverage the over coverage that happened before is actually taking away from the history that it should be part of the sports landscape.
And that's the thing about sports, which I've come to realize when we think back to a lot of these stories, is we move on very fast as sports fans.
No kidding.
Forgive and forget very quickly. There's just so much going on in the world of sports that this Sandusky story, it was the flavor of the day for a few months, and now it's just like, you know, there's other stuff going on. Clearly one of the most, you know, vile people, you know, the world's ever seen. But we move on. That's just how sports are, and that's what makes it so fun, because you're not sitting on the same topic month after month after month, because there's so much else to discuss.
Only when Tim Tebow or Brett Favre does something.
Exactly. You can add LeBron and Peyton Manning.
Yes,
that's the
good
Rushmore
point.
More people that get over-talked about. Two lockouts happened.
Wow.
Well, really, yeah, I mean, it's 2011.
Yep, technically.
The lockout ended for the NFL before there were any missed games. That was at the end of July, the lockout ended. And then, obviously, the NBA canceled the first... however many weeks, 2 months of the season? It was a 3-game season, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, no, 66, remember? 66. You know what it was? They did 50, I think, in 99, and they thought they were going to have to do that again, but they were like, all right, we'll do back-to-back-to-backs. We're gonna screw you guys all the way home. You know, it's awful. It was tough.
48?
It was tough.
Was the NHL had 48?
That sounds about right. This past year, or was it last year? I think it was 2012, 2013.
Something like that.
Or 2013, yeah. Very interesting. Because the Blackhawks had that crazy win streak, and they were able to take it, and very odds.
Last year?
Isn't that crazy?
It was, yeah. Yeah,
then they ended up winning the Stanley Cup.
I loved that short season. I really did.
See, what's interesting is that why would you play 66 games when, well, obviously money. But for the sports themselves, basketball lends itself to a 50 or 40 game season. Hockey also does as well. You're not going to... Baseball, I guess it makes sense, but why is the playoff 7 games and why is there a 1-game playoff in baseball?
That doesn't make any sense.
See, these are why you're looking for the entertainment balance with the sport, and now it's entertainment and how much money can you actually milk out of these fans. And they still can milk more. It's unbelievable. You can play an 18-game NFL season. You can play a 20-game NFL season. But if Bill Simmons says you can actually move it to a situation in which you only can play a certain percentage of games, you know, per player, then there might be something in the midst for the NFL, which is obviously the king of sports right now in America. It's just weird. Just watching a season that just continues and continues and continues, we're never going to see the backlash until, what, contracts are in the billions? I'm trying to think of, like, what I just... It's a very odd situation.
Yeah. It's hard to say. I personally think that if records were meaningless in baseball, you know, if there wasn't so much attributed to stats, I think making it at a 120-game season would be fine with me. I think baseball is just... To me, it's too long.
It drags on,
especially in the middle of the summer. I just think it could be shorter. Especially when it starts getting freezing cold in October and November, it's just like it's not even good. It's not baseball weather. I just think it could be compressed a lot more. You can do a, you know, best out of three playing for wild card instead of a
one definitely. Game. It's tough for the rest for all the other teams. But hey, by the way, you know, you always remember George Bush or all the other presidents in their nice little coats, you know, the World Series coat thrown out the first pitch of the World Series game one. So always get excited for them freezing as they're trying to throw that first pitch.
All right, so let's move over to 2012, unless you have any other stories from 2011 that are, you know, worth our while. Yeah, all right, so let's move over to 2012. Tim Tebow won a playoff game that year. Right at the beginning
that was
of
awesome.
January. Obviously, his last playoff win he'll ever have, one would think, although he's kind of, you know, he's, you know, the second coming, so, you know, who knows, he might resurrect his career. No pun intended on that one.
That was beautiful.
That was just an incredible game. I was in South Africa for that, I remember, but when he beat the Steelers with that overtime touchdown to Demaryius Thomas, first play of overtime, if I'm not mistaken.
Pretty sure it was.
That was a great moment for Tebow.
It was a great moment for what has become the Denver Broncos history. It actually began this, well, what's weird is that they haven't won a Super Bowl in a long time still, but they were so close this past year. It began this resurrection of the Denver Broncos franchise. I remember rooting for them a little bit when I was younger. You know, just had that, you know, it was like Brian Griese. I always played with them in, like, NFL games. And, of course, you know, Elway, Terrell Davis.
Jake Plummer.
Oh, the Plummer days. We were talking about Arizona during the NFL draft. We'll aside here. Jake Plummer was the last actual good quarterback for them who, I understand Kurt Warner, but actual quarterback that played more than a few years.
Yep.
So Kurt Warner led them to a Super Bowl. Fantastic. But Plummer was a mainstay for almost a decade there. So we were, you know, just to figure out where Manziel was going to go, and we can talk a little bit about that as the one of the last things as a part of the draft. But just thinking about how Tim Tebow performed in this situation, it was unbelievable. And obviously, I think the Patriots obliterated him the next week, but it was, do you think it was the next step towards the running QB, like this next step towards these Manziels, these Russell Wilsons, these active quarterbacks? Obviously, these guys have much better arms than Tebow ever will. But do you think it actually added a little bit extra to the quarterback position?
Yeah, I think that was, you know, the tip of the iceberg for the mobile quarterback. Interesting.
Because really Vic, that's the only guy I can think of that was before.
But Vic wasn't that successful.
Interesting. Oh, well, we know why.
Exactly. What Tebow showed is that if you make a defense prepare for you in multiple different ways, it makes their lives a lot more difficult.
Yeah.
And it takes a lot more time for defensive coaches to catch up to the offensive nuances. We look at Chip Kelly's offense. We'll see if that gets stuffed a little bit this year. Teams have an opportunity to figure out how to stop them. 2 years ago, you had the running quarterbacks with Griffin, Kaepernick, and...
Oh, was it Wilson?
Russell Wilson, yeah. Exactly. Last year, they weren't as dominant running the ball.
Yeah, you know? I think it's the scheme. If you reproduce, well, of course, Kaepernick, for some reason, it seemed like he was underrated throughout the season. And then, of course, you had the clash in the NFC Championship. But it's really interesting that you see they still made it to the NFC Championship. You thought they had a poor season. But in the NFL, as long as you can step up, make the playoffs, you put yourself in a position like the Steelers every year, you know, except for, I guess, this past year, to make it to the Super Bowl and win. And that's why, you know, the Rams are trying to beef up in that division, but you don't know where you
can
get
with.
That's
the toughest division in football, and it just seems like they keep accruing talent. It's going to be tough to beat. All right, the Pats.
Oh.
Super Bowl loss to the Giants.
Yeah.
Times two, obviously.
We watched that one together, right?
We did. It was a pretty... I remember we were in our dorm. We had about 12 people. Most were Pats fans.
Yeah.
Everyone else were anti-Pats fans. My takeaway from that game is still Wes Welker's drop.
Yeah.
I remember saying after that drop, I'm like, we're going to lose this game. That was the game to win.
Yeah.
You get that. You're giving them very little time, even if you have to kick a field goal or just run the clock out. Wes Welker has to make that catch. And as much as he did in New England, that is how his legacy will be remembered by me.
In retrospect, Pats made it. We also watched this game together because Tucker was the kicker for
Justin
the Baltimore...
Tucker.
Justin Tucker.
Wasn't it Cundiff?
Cundiff, thank you very much. Justin, you know what it was? I think Tucker's... Yeah, Tucker's been fantastic. Thank you. Cundiff missed a chip shot to...
Yeah,
was it to tie or to win?
I believe it was to tie.
To tie the AFC Championship game against the New England Patriots.
Well, you remember that.
And there was a touchdown drop.
Lee Evans. I'm trying to remember the guy. Sterling Moore. Was it Sterling Moore who punched the ball out of...
That sounds so familiar.
Lee Evans' hand. It was just... They really gave that game away. And they obviously came back the next year and won a Super Bowl. So they're
exactly.
Okay. You know, that was a fun run for the Pats, obviously marred by the loss to the Giants. I will, for the rest of my life, never want to see the Giants in the playoffs. Give me any other team that doesn't have Eli Manning as quarterback. It seems like he plays his best against the Patriots, and I hate that. Jeremy Lin, Lin's sanity stats. Oh man, that was a fun run. Obviously, Jeremy Lin's nowhere near the superstar he was for that stretch of time, but what do you remember from that incredible run that he had, lifting the Knicks and taking them to the playoffs?
Well, what's really interesting about Linsanity is that, once again, we've seen the great story a few years ago, or the guys we've mentioned a few years ago, have a little bit of the resurrection. He's a great guard off the bench, but he needs the ball, and we know he needs the ball from what he did in New York. That revolutionized Knicks basketball. We mentioned how they needed a center. Problem is, the Knicks got a center, but have no other pieces to an actual basketball team now. So they've kind of... And then you saw the, I think it was the poison pill contract that lured him to Houston, where they end up, you know, you end up beefing up, I think, the last few years of the contract so that it's a little bit more enticing so the player will go there. So if he was still in New York, would they have been a finals contender? I know he's not a deciding factor, but would he have been interesting?
The way Raymond Felton's played this year, he's arguably one of, if not the worst point guard in the NBA this year. What if Jeremy Lin's there? It just seemed like he had this sense of comfort and familiarity in New York, and he just hasn't looked like the same player in Houston. Maybe he was just a flash in the pan, but he's still getting minutes on a contending team in Houston. It just seemed like it worked great for him in New York. You have to wonder. Let's, just because in the interest of time stats, we're running low. We have someone on the line, so why don't we bring him on? But we're gonna talk. I'm guessing we're gonna be talking about Miami Heat basketball. So let's get him on the air if he's still on the line, and we're talking to Daniel Levine. What's up, Daniel?
Hey, this is Pete from Wheaton, Illinois. How you guys doing?
our call screener must have gotten the name wrong. What's up,
Pete? All good things. Here to share some of my highlights from the past 4 years of sports broadcasting.
Awesome, man. Let's hear it.
Heat, I think that your analysis would definitely be complete without talking about some Heat basketball dominating the NBA over the past 3 years.
I didn't know that Pete from Wheaton, you know, Wheaton really does not seem to be the hub of Heat basketball. Neither does Miami. But what was the reason for you becoming a Heat fan?
Since Wheaton doesn't have its own basketball team,
you guys
just root for the best.
You guys...
And there's no doubt that the Miami Heat are the best of the best.
Front running, that's exactly.
Does that happen to coincide with summer 2010 coming, or is that just a coincidence? Because you were a Heat fan.
Well, he is a champion, and he always follows... Champions always will follow greatness, so LeBron was naturally attracted to Miami Heat franchise.
Of course, absolutely. And Wheaton basketball, you know, that D3 basketball is not the...
It's not gonna come.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense. So,
what was your favorite moment of the Heat run of the last 3+ years?
Well, I think we all know what my favorite moment of the Heat run would be. Game 6, Ray Allen, quarter 3. Staring down the guards about to bring out the trophy and just nailing the three to bring us our second consecutive championship.
Yeah, I think
that was unbelievable.
Yeah, definitely
that changed basketball history.
Moment. Absolutely. I mean, LeBron James' legacy completely changes if that shot does not go in.
Yeah.
So anyway, Pete, appreciate the call. Thank you for your contribution over the years. And
thank you for giving Wash U some incredible sports radio over the past 4 years. It's been very much appreciated.
Appreciate it. Thanks. Yeah.
Thank you very much, Pete. Really appreciate it.
Have a good one. Bye-bye.
Bye, too. Bye. All
right. So, yeah, we actually, in fairness to Pete, we haven't really talked about the Heat, and they have had a
pretty big win. Well, we can jump right into that.
But
if you want to mention.
One thing that we could
personally attest to. Yep, as I was going to say.
The Eastern Conference Final Series 2012. Celtics go down 2-0 in Miami, come back home, win the next two, go into Miami for game 5, series tied at 2, Paul Pierce up 1, drops 3 LeBron's eyelid, Celtics go up 3-2, coming back home to the Garden, and LeBron James just doing LeBron James stuff. We were both there, thank you, thanks to you offering my brother and myself 2 tickets.
Dr. Jeff, of course.
Appreciate it, Dr. Jeff, shout out to you. But, man, LeBron James just went on a tear, a historic performance in 3 quarters. He set 45 points. What do you remember about LeBron James' historic performance that night?
So the rest of the team scored, what, 43. Oh, no, what was it? 53. Thank you. Yep. Wow.
Well, let's think about it. Oh, he actually, you know what? I'm wrong. He did play 45 minutes. I thought he only
45 points in 45 minutes. It's, yep. You know what it was? I think he just wanted to put the sugar. It was just like a nice little sugar on or what was it? The cherry on top of game six. Outscoring the Celtics by 10 points in the first quarter, 3 in the second, and then just a nice little sixer in the fourth. It was dominant. I remember this reminded me of game seven against Orlando. 2009, when Kevin Garnett was hurt. Fortunately, in this game, no one was hurt for the Celtics. It was just that everybody was freaking old. And you're seeing the Celtics being, or I'm sorry, the Celtics are being very old. And they could have won last night. Ugh. Ugh. Oh, that was so close. If they had that victory, it would have made you think that they would have had a chance. You're seeing a team like this, led by Rondo, and I think this is what's going the next few years. I even saw a few Celtics fans walking down the street a few days ago, actually. It was really funny, and we're like, you know, oh, maybe next year. No, 2 years. We have no idea what the Celtics team is going to look like. I have no idea what they're going to even be trying towards. I'm really hoping the Melo, Kevin Love, Rondo, trio occurs in some fashion. But
all right, we don't know what the draft lottery is going to be.
Oh, that's going to be so much fun. May 20th. One week,
the
baby.
The Celtics have a top five pick.
Yes.
Would you rather them make the pick or trade it for Kevin Love?
Oh, well, if Kevin Love's on the table, I'm trading any of those picks for Kevin Love. I'm trading 1 through 60 for Kevin Love. And then Melo comes. It's almost a done deal. I think Melo goes to Chicago because I don't think the Kevin Love...
Makes a lot of sense. They have the deep pockets.
She's looking for a house out there. There were reports about that.
They can amnesty Boozer.
That's the move. And that's what's going to happen. The Bulls are going to win the championship next year with Melo.
Wow, you heard it here first. That's going with Chicago as his 2015 champions.
Quick thing about analytics in the NBA. The mid-range jumper, of course, the least efficient shot in basketball. But when you have a guy who hits shots like no other, like a Marcus Aldridge and Carmelo Anthony, you want them to shoot those. You want them to shoot those shots. That's what it is. And I feel like you're looking at a situation in which the Bulls are a very strong defensive team. Melo will be able to buy into that because, well, Derrick Rose also being on the defensive end. I know that's not really the best defense either. But having the rest of the defense together, along with those two guys leading your offense, having Joakim Noah as your point center still, it's going to be a fantastic team. It's just if the Celtics are able to get a top pick, they're going to take it most likely, and that'll be the rebuilding. I just don't know if I see the Kevin Love trade, but if it happens, it happens. It'd be fantastic.
The reason why I like Melo to Chicago is just because he's not going to be expected to play shutdown defense.
There you go.
They're going to say to him, listen, go out there and score 30 on 20, 25 shots. Rest yourself. We've got the interior defense to, you know, let you get by with your defensive deficiencies.
Exactly.
I know we're expecting a call, Stats. Would you be ready for that?
Oh, we are? Interesting.
We're expecting a call. We'll see if it actually comes
through.
Interesting. I guess let's just in the interest of time, Red Sox over Cardinals this past fall, 2013.
Yeah.
That was an awesome run after the Boston bombings.
Oh, yes.
Really can't
yes.
be said other than it really uplifted the city, that run. After replacing Bobby Valentine, John Farrell comes in. They bring in some clubhouse type of guys, not the stars. And it was a case study in how team chemistry can really make a difference and overcome talent deficiencies.
Does team chemistry come before wins, or do wins come before team chemistry?
That's the age-old question. It took some heroic performances. You know, David Ortiz hitting .688 in the World Series. John Lester, if he had been a free agent, earning himself $200 million this past offseason if he had been a free agent. So those types of things, you know, it's easy to point to chemistry when a team has no talent. Then, okay, they're, you know, the bottom of the cellar, but that happens. Let's go out there to Trevor Kasten, our former producer. What's up, Trevor? Trevor.
Yeah, hello?
You're on the air, dude. What's going on?
How you doing?
We're good, man.
It's crazy. It's the last show.
I know. We're also very upset. I'm sure you are, too.
Very upset. Well, congrats on graduating. I just wanted to call in because it's the last show. I want your opinion on who do you think is going to win the NBA title. I can't see anybody beating the Heat at this point.
Yes, Stats, you want to take that first?
Sure, Trevor, just quick thing before we let you go. Anything else you'd like to say before we close the show? Because we're almost at the end here.
Big win for the Mets last night?
The Mets, of course.
Just like to put that out there over the Yankees.
Are they going
to
win the World Series?
And again, are the Mets going to win the World Series? I wouldn't go to say that far.
In the next 50 years?
And we'll take it.
In
the next 50 years?
Yeah.
I think we'll win the World Series.
There we go.
In the
next 50 years. All right, you heard it here first. Thanks, Trevor. Appreciate it. Thanks for all your
And congrats on the graduation and the end of a
Era. Thank you.
Thanks, Trevor.
Appreciate Trevor. And Trevor was a fantastic producer for us. We really appreciate all that he did and all that he was part of. And, you know, it was a fun time having Trevor on the show. And it was fun working with him. He'll be a great manager for the basketball team heading forward. The NBA playoffs.
Hey, give me your pick.
Oh.
What do you think?
Heat are going to lose in the finals. Just to whom? To whom? The Spurs. All right, we're going revenge time, all right? I thought it was going to be the Clippers originally, just not seeing that the Clippers have the consistency. So if the Clippers face the Heat, I think the Heat might be able to win. My dark horses are originally the Clippers over the Pacers, but I'm just not sure I can see the Pacers getting back to the Heat. I'm just not sure they can make it to that level. You know, I don't think it's that situation in which... But you know what? If there is a fun little extra thing that I can see happening, it would be the Clippers over the Pacers. But... Spurs over Heat, that was what I was predicting heading in the playoffs because of my Corner 3-pointer article about the team differentials. I'll mention to that a little later. But that's what I'm liking. That's the big thing right now. I just don't see – the Heat are not giving me confidence in them winning this title. Playing more than 300 games or so over the last few years, it's not – it's catching up with them. They're not looking good every night, and that's why.
Yeah, I got to see with my preseason pick stats. It's on record. I had
Nets.
Ooh. It's not looking good for the Nets. Just got to go into Miami, win game 5, come back home in game 6, then pull off a toss-up of a game 7, then go on to beat the Pacers. But still, if that's not going to happen, if it's going to be Miami, Indiana,
yeah.
Indiana's getting their swag back. I think they're getting hot at the right time. They match up well with the Heat. Don't write off the Pacers being able to take over the Heat. This is the first time they're playing the Heat with home court advantage. Keep that in mind. Game 7 would be in Indiana.
They've been terrible at home in the playoffs.
In the playoffs.
I got you.
But again, they're getting hot at the right time.
I got you.
Over the regular season, I think they might have been the best home.
They were.
And I think the Thunder come out of this series. I think they're not going to blow a game like they did against the Clippers. That was a blip on the radar. I think Kevin Durant continues to just assert himself. Thunder win the championship. Stats, any final thoughts as we wind down our final official Bedtime Sports Show?
It was a lot of fun. It was a fantastic journey. I appreciate you bringing me a part of such a great group here at Bedtime Sports, all 50,000 employees that we have every year. What a great time we had at Bedtime Sports, and thank you to everybody behind the scenes.
Yeah, I just want to echo what Stats said. Thank you to all the co-hosts over the years, Adam Lowenstein, Brad Lewis, Craig Hoogler. We had a bunch of fill-in hosts. The show, the Alex Grafel, is the show that led into us this past semester with the baseball show. Definitely listen to him next semester covering the bases. That's going to be a great baseball show. Teddy Drucker filled in at one point. He's also going to have a show next semester. So K-Word's in good hands in terms of sports talk. Thank you for all your patronage, following the show on Twitter, Facebook. We might have a show or two this summer.
Possibly, yes.
Plus, we'll definitely be sure to share that information via the Facebook page. Thank you all for listening, being great fans. This is Bradley Basker alongside Stats Adam signing off for the final time. Bye-bye.